Radha Madhava Kunda Vyadi Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridvara Dadi Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridvara Dadi Yashoda Nandana Prada Jana Dandana Yashoda Nandana Prada Jana Dandana Jamuna Tira Vanachadi Jamuna Tira Vanachadi Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jai Om Vishupat Paramahansa Paribaragachaya Sudera Sadashi Shimat Avaichananara Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai His Confounder Acharya Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nama Acharya Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sega Ho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vinda Ki Jai Krantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gop Premanande, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga, all glories to Shri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 22. Which verse is it? 53. Evam Adhyatma Yogena Karmani Anu Samacharan Putran Utpadayam Asa Pancha Adichishi Atma Sammatan Evam Madhyatma Yogena Karmanyanu samacharan Putran utpadayamasa Panchashishyatma sammatan Evam adhyatma yogena Karmanyanu samacharan Putran utpadayam asa Panchashishyatma sammatan Karmanyanu Hile.
Atma yogena karmanyanu samacharan putran nasa panchashijatma samata.
Ladies,
yogena samacharan putranu padayamasa panchashishyatma samatan.
Evam, thus, adhyatma yogena, by the means of bhakti yoga, karmani, activities, anu, always, samacharan, executing, putran, sons, Utpadayam asa, begotten, pancha, five, Archishi, in his wife Archi, Atma, own, sammatan, according to his desire. Translation. Being situated in the liberated position of devotional service, Prithu Maharaj not only performed all fruitive activities, but also begot five sons by his wife Archi. Indeed, all his sons were begotten according to his own desire. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. As a householder, Prithu Maharaj had five sons by his wife Archi, and all these sons were begotten as he desired them. They were not born whimsically or by accident. How one can beget children according to one's own desire is practically unknown in the present age, Kali Yuga. In this regard, the secret of success depends on the parents' acceptance of the various purificatory methods known as samskaras. The first samskara, the Gabadhana samskara, or child-begetting samskara, is compulsory, especially for the higher castes, the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, sex life which is not against religious principles is Krishna himself. And according to religious principles, when one wants to beget a child, he must perform the Gabadhana samskara before having sex. The mental state of the father and mother before sex will certainly affect the mentality of the child to be begotten. The child who is begotten out of lust may not turn out as the parents desire. As stated in the Shastras, yatha yuni yatha bijam, yatha yunihi indicates the mother and yatha bijam indicates the father. If the mental state of the parents is prepared before they have sex, the child which they will beget will certainly reflect their mental condition. It is therefore understood by the words Atma Sammatan that both Prithu Maharaj and Archi underwent the Gabadhana purificatory process before begetting children,
And thus they begot all their sons according to their desires and purified mental states. Prithu Maharaj did not beget his children out of lust, nor was he attracted to his wife for sense gratificatory purposes. He begot the children as a grihastha for the future administration of his government all over the world. Evam adhyatma yogena karmanya sumacharam putran utpadayam asa pancha shishyatma sammatan. Translation again. Being situated in the liberated position of devotional service, Prithu Maharaj not only performed all fruitive activities, but also begot five sons by his wife Archi. Indeed, all his sons were begotten according to his own desire. So that's the Vedic system of family planning. Family planning does not mean to just have a lot of children, but it means that to beget children to one's desire, which naturally in the Vedic culture means that the children should become very nice devotees of Lord Vishnu, of Lord Krishna. That's the meaning of Vedic family planning. And as Srila Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavad Gita, that type of a sexual indulgence, it is according to religious principles. Lord Krishna states, dhamma vidutto bhuteshu kamo asmi. Asmi, that is me, non-different from Krishna. So everything can be engaged in Krishna's service. And if there's anything which we cannot engage in Krishna's service, then that we have to reject, we have to renounce. And in any case, that's beneficial for us. Anyway. Just like those edible things, foodstuff, which we cannot offer to Krishna, it is not very healthy for the body. Similarly, activities which are sinful, which cannot be engaged in Krishna's service, they are harmful in the sense it will result in a bad karma. Bad karma means we have to suffer. Why people suffer so much all over the world? It is primarily related to previous activities. That's why there's so much suffering. Of course, that should not justify harmful activities. That would be a little bit too simple. Material nature is not that simplistic. I punch someone in the nose, it's your karma. It's supposed to happen. Why you protest? Sometimes when the people hear about the Vanashram caste system and the laws of karma, then they have this concept, Westerners, that they visualize India, a lot of people on the street, animals too, and the rickshaw driver, he falls off from the roadside and falls into some water, whatever. And then people, they just pass by and everybody just remarks, this is karma, this is karma, instead of helping him out. So it is something like, if I go, just like simply or merely to the fact that I know what causes someone suffering, it does not mean therefore I should not help someone who suffers. You could give the example of going to a physician, a doctor, and he analyzes your problem. You have a stomach ache, for example, and he exactly understood what causes that stomach ache.
He knows it. But that doesn't mean he tells you, you see, that's the cause, now you go home, suffer. No, he helps you also. He knows the cause of your problem, and he gives you medicine, he also helps you. So that's the proper attitude. Not just to understand the cause of people's suffering and then you walk away, but you also help them. Especially you help them in the sense of they prevent any further suffering. You help them with the present suffering to relieve it, and then on top of it, you also educate them how to prevent any further suffering. That's the proper attitude of a knowledgeable person. Not just to recognize everybody's suffering and I know what is the cause and then you walk away. So, generally we can conclude as suffering because of previous sinful activities. Sinful activities mean it must result in suffering. And if I enjoy, materially enjoy, that must mean previously I must have performed some pious activities. So devotees, they're not interested either in pious or sinful activities because they both bind us to this material existence, which overall, as Krishna himself states in the Bhagavad Gita, is full of suffering. Sometimes difficult to understand, especially when people enjoy materially. Now, how can you call this whole material existence suffering? I cannot accept. But it is. Ultimately, it is full of suffering. Just like Srila Prabhupada once gave the example of punishment which happened. It was a custom in England, Great Britain, that someone who was being punished, they bound him on a chair, and then this chair they ducked underneath, you say, into the water until he almost suffocated. His face almost turned blue. And then they took him out of the water just for a second. He could just grasp a little air and again underneath till he almost suffocated. Then give a little relief again underneath the water. That's the punishment. So this is the vision of a transcendentalist. He can see everything in this world with the eyes of eternity. And he's not irritated by the 1 second relief. That means this human form of life. Among millions and billions of lifetimes, 8,400,000 species of life transmigrating, finally the soul gets that, you know, being taken out of the water, so to speak, little relief. And then we get this human form of life and we try to enjoy. And even within our human life, how much enjoyment we really have. If you ask people, ask anybody in material society, how much did you really enjoy this week? Maybe at the weekend, 1-2 nights, and that's it. Rest of the week, just you have to do so many uncomfortable things. That's also Sankhya philosophy. If you analytically study your body, take the example of a finger, how much pain can you cause to the finger? So in so many different ways. You can take a needle and pinch it. Ooh. Take a splinter and go underneath your nail and push it inside. Very nice. So many. You take a hammer, smash it on top of the nail, very ecstatic. You take a fire, burn it, anything. So many different ways you can give pain to the finger. Or you can sharpen it into small pieces. Many things you can do. There are movies about this. These horror movies, they have many, many ideas how to torture this body. But how much pleasure can you give to the finger? Already you run out of ideas. You can massage it, okay, put a little oil on it and manicure the nails, a little bit, something you can do. But in comparison, the suffering always, material nature has so many ideas how to inflict suffering. pleasure very, very limited. Similarly, you can take any other part of this body. The pleasure very limited, pain, so many ideas are there. So even within this human form of life, we have to undergo so many tribulations. And then overall, if you see the entire picture of our existence, yes, Krishna concludes. It is really, everything is temporary. And even if you get some relief from your present suffering, you think, oh, now my life improved. I have some money now. Before I never had money, now I have some money. And all the time I was single, always desiring to get a handsome husband, very chaste wife. As they say, everybody desires a Lakshmi in this world, everybody desires a Vishnu in this world. Husband should be just like Vishnu, wife just like Lakshmi. So if you get it, still you cannot remain in that position. You will also be kicked out, even if you get some relief. That is also temporary. Therefore, Krishna uses these two terms, full of suffering, and on top of it, temporary. Even you get some relief from your suffering, that position, relief position, you also cannot remain. You will be kicked out. So therefore, an intelligent person, he will never take shelter in this material world. We might get a little bit entangled, that difficult to avoid, but we should not take shelter. That's the difference of the devotee and the materialist. Devotee sometimes might get a little bit entangled, but he never takes shelter in the material world. That's the difference. Devotee always takes shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, despite all the various allurements of Maya. He never gives in, so to speak. He never surrenders. He takes a respectful distance from material nature. Not in an angry mood like the Mayavadis. Out of frustration, they renounce. Srila Prabhupada used to give the example of the fox and the grapes hanging high. He couldn't reach them, jumping. And then out of frustration, he concluded, because he could not reach them, anyway, they're sour. So that type of renunciation will not help. Or another type of renunciation is another example Prabhupada gave. A merchant, he was selling puffed rice, pushing a wooden cart and a lot of puffed rice he tried to sell. Puffed rice, as you know, very light. The strong wind came, blew everything away, scattered all over the field, and then he raised his arms and he said, Govinda Bhog, Govinda Bhog. It is an offering to Govinda, to the Lord. Before, he had no idea, no desire to offer even one puffed rice corn. He didn't want to do. Now by force, everything blown away, oh, now it's an offering to God. That's the problem. This is a real problem. People join Krishna consciousness when they have no puffed rice left. Totally worn out, beaten like a dog, no possessions, no brains left, and then, oh, I want to become a devotee. I mean, that's also okay. We accept everybody. But why don't you come a little bit before? We give some brain to Krishna, some money to Krishna, car to Krishna, something. Why you always come totally finished? There's no Govinda Bhog. Now I surrender. And then as soon as there's a little, due to devotional service, we get little material, some material help, little opulence, immediately again we give it up. Now no need anymore for Krishna. A very bad mentality. Therefore, Prahlad Maharashi instructs that Kaumara Ashri Pragyo, Kaumara, when we are very young, at that age, then you should cultivate Krishna consciousness. Because when you are grown up, you have so much energy, you are an intelligent boy, then serve Krishna very, very nicely. Then you can serve Lord Krishna. To serve Lord Krishna does not mean only within the mind. That's also nice. But as Rupa Goswami instructs us, the knowledge acquiring and active senses, both type of senses, we have to engage in Krishna service, the working senses and the knowledge acquiring senses, both. We always have to endeavor to engage all our senses in Krishna service, our legs, our hands, our intelligence, our mind, our eyes, everything. Then we are being properly situated in Krishna service. Just like the other day I was thinking, in the early days, our understanding of surrendering to Krishna was very simple. Like when we visited the temple before we factually joined, we always, it was a custom, we brought something for the deities, for Krishna. Flower, little fruit. In India, you still see, people do not just visit the temple empty-handed. They always have a little plastic bag full of fruits or coconuts, something they always bring. Patram pushpam phalam toyam, that's the idea. Krishna's, and that verse, Krishna very intelligent. Patram. Pushpam, a flower, you offer flower to me, Krishna states. And then you might argue flower, winter time, no flowers. Then, okay, then offer fruit. Again, winter time. How can fruits grow winter time? Then a leaf, also difficult, because all the leaves are gone. Then at the end, all right, then offer me some water. And then you cannot argue, oh, no water, because then you die. You need some liquid, something. Actually, in one lecture, Srila Prabhupada explained that water refers to liquid, not just water, liquid. So again, you cannot argue that I never drink water. Hare Krishna. No problem. I just try to find some reciprocation. I only drink fruit juice and milk, no water. No. In any case, water, that's the essence of all liquids. So then we cannot argue. I have no water. Then you die. So at least, whatever you drink, you know, give a little. I remember in one, of course that's not the recommended process, but Srila Prabhupada, he was so kind. Once in Sweden, Stockholm, Srila Prabhupada delivered a lecture, and before this lecture someone told Srila Prabhupada, in Scandinavia people are drinking a lot, so much alcohol, drinking. Prabhupada said, so is it so? Yes, Prabhupada, they're drinking so much. So in that public lecture, Prabhupada, he quoted that verse, and then he said, just like if you drink wine, just try to think that this taste is Krishna. You have so much compassion. You are so much attached to wine. Then try to think, this is the taste of Krishna. Some appreciation should be there, something. Start from wherever you are, whatever is your attachment. Try to connect this with Krishna. So of course, as devotees now, we should not make that step back and appreciate the taste of wine. Now, that is behind, that we left this behind. So back to the samskaras, the Vedic samskaras, they sanctify the person during progressive stage of family life. Two of those samskaras mark the change of ashram, upanayam. Upanayam means when the child, son, enters into the brahmachari life. Upanayam also means when he receives sacred thread. You accept a guru, that also means upanayam. Now you come closer, sacred thread. Traditionally, anyone who wears a sacred thread, then you understand he has a guru. That's the tradition, upanayam. And then vivaha, that most of the devotees know, vivaha yajna, everybody's thrilled about that yajna. But it should last, that's another point. This should not be the one of many vivaha yajnas. Only one, that's the Vedic prescription. One upanayam, one vivaha yajna, marriage ceremony. And then, though Vedic samskaras may be considered secondary activities, because they are discarded when one passes from the material body, and from society, still they are important because they sanctify and prepare the body and mind for the primary devotional activities. So there's an advantage, although they're secondary, not direct devotional service, but they are important. Gopal Bhatta Goswami states that those who properly performed all the samskaras, it will be much easier for them to follow the sadhana process of devotion service strictly. So it is also due to our materialistic, you know, unvedic upbringing that we have such a hard time to follow our sadhana properly. It is a great disadvantage. Of course, there are no obstacles. Anybody can take up devotion service. There are no, I don't know the English word, like before you prepare nicely and then only then you can take up devotion service. This is not necessary. In whatever condition anyone is, you can take up devotion service if you desire so. But still, for some, it will be very, very difficult. For some, extremely difficult. For some, impossible. And for some, very easy. And those who performed all these and went through these samskaras, they, for them, it will be very easy to follow the sadhana process. It's like many devotees complain. In the morning, I always feel tired and chanting restless because no samskaras. You're just out of materialistic life, we took up the sadhana process. That's sometimes difficult. But still, the prime sadhana activity we perform is chanting of Hare Krishna. That's the most important. That's the most important. Jiva Goswami also explains, out of these nine activities of devotional service, it's chanting Hare Krishna that's the most important. And all the other activities of devotional service, Vandanam, like deity worship you perform, and so many other activities, they all must be accompanied by the process of chanting Hare Krishna. You cannot worship the deities without chanting Hare Krishna. It must be. There's also one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam which explains that in this age of Kali, nobody can worship, do this pancharaktika vidhi, worship the deities perfectly. There's always some fault, some mistake, something. You cannot do this perfect. But everything will be rectified and purified just by this chanting of Hare Krishna. So it always must be there. If we perform a yajna sacrifice, you must chant Hare Krishna, at least some portion, some part of it. So that's compulsory, most important. And because of the potency of the holy name, yes, we can take up devotion service immediately. But still, it might be sometimes difficult. And that's because we did not undergo the samskaras. So many different samskaras are there. Gabadana we talked about. Shoshyanti Homa, safe delivery, that's another samskara. Jatakama, birth, the first outing when the child for the first time goes into the nature. It's another samskara. Then nama kadana, giving a name to the child. Pausti, karma, nourishment. Then ana prasanam, you, for the first time you give grains to the child. Karana vedha, piercing the ears. It's another. So many samskaras. Related to this, there's an interesting explanation by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. I just quoted for you. It's very interesting. He states that the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of topics related to Krishna. When those topics enter the ear, Krishna directly manifests. Then the contaminations in the form of material topics or the two demons, Madhu and Kaitava, who are like dirt within the ear, are destroyed. This is called Karana Veda Samskara, the purificatory process of piercing the ear of a child. If we accept the material covering on our spiritual ears, then words related to material enjoyment agitate our heart. Then subject matters not related to Krishna becomes our desired goal of life. But when one properly hears Srimad Bhagavatam, then the chanting of the holy name, the hearing about the form, qualities, the associates, pastimes of the Lord manifest within the heart. Then one realizes that the heart is not different from Vrindavan. That is where Lord Krishna resides. Lord Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Such a nice explanation. Jiva Goswami confirms, and we also know from Srila Prabhupada's teachings, that Lord Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. That Akrura, when he went, he just came to the edge of Vrindavan, leaving Vrindavan, and then he, how was it, he took his bath, right? Took his bath, he saw Vishnu, and then this description is given. Then the that Vishnu, he exchanged position with Krishna, who was sitting on the chariot. So the Krishna who was sitting on a chariot, he went back to Vrindavan. And the Vasudev Krishna from Vishnu, he sat on a chariot and then he went to Dwaraka. That's the explanation. So Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Krishna factually returned back to Vrindavan. And then Vasudev Krishna, who is an expansion of Lord Krishna, went to Dwaraka. Then the hair cutting, that's another ceremony, purificatory, samskara, upanayanam, that we explained. Then samavatana, graduation, when the education is over, then the boy returns, that's another ceremony, vivaha, and then finally antyeshti, that's the funeral. So many samskaras are there. The rites also serve the purpose of ensuring that the man and wife become aware of their spiritual duties in married life and not to exploit each other for sensual pleasure. That's the advantage of taking the samskaras seriously, because then we are being trained in the following rules and regulations. And this will protect the family life, the married life. Another very purifying activity is for the householders to always have guests at home. To always have guests at home. It's very, very purifying. Because then the wife is engaged in cooking, taking care of the guests in various ways. The husband, he does the same. He takes care, conversation, kirtan, like that. Very, very nice. But if the doors are always closed, closed, private, too much private life, it is not good. And children also, very helpful. When the child sits on the lap of your wife, you have a different relationship. But no child, different relationship. Of course, I'm not indicating everybody must have children. But in one sense, yes, that's the another process of purifying the Grihastha Ashram, to have children. It is recommended to have children. But still, even if there are no children, if husband and wife are nicely engaged in Lord Krishna's service, then that's of course the highest standard of purification, to always be engaged in Krishna's service. But that is sometimes difficult for us, to be 24 hours engaged in Krishna's service. This is very difficult. Adhikari, the Grihasthas, they have this title, Adhikari. So-and-so das Adhikari, that means he's a householder. Adhikari means a candidate for samskaras. That's the direct meaning of Adhikari. He's a candidate to follow all these samskaras. Now he's qualified to do it. According to the scriptures, anyone who is born, anyone who is to be called civilized, must undergo the samskaras, Vedic samskaras. The usual samskaras manual are compiled by those who are interested in karma, material fruits, and they prescribe worship of the devatas, the demigods, the pitris, for material prosperity. Then Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami has compiled Sat Kriya Saradipika. That's the Vedic Samskara manual. So everything is being replaced. Instead of worshipping the demigods, you worship the great sages of the past, great acharyas, spiritual authorities, etc. So to make it short, he replaced the material objects of worship with the devotional objects of worship. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he recommended to all his householders to strictly follow the manual given by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Even in Lord Krishna's pastimes, we can see that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they followed so many Vedic rules and regulations. Even in Lord Krishna's pastimes, there was no need. Lord Krishna was personally present. Everybody could just be engaged in Krishna's service directly. But still, we can see so many Vedic rules, regulations they used to follow. We have the example of the gopis. They also performed a particular type of worship also to the sun. This was very, very prominent in Lord Krishna's pastimes. All the young, the girl gopis, they went to the Surya Kunda, worshipped the sun god to get a very, very nice husband. So they also followed many Vedic rules and regulations. Just like there's this one story. Once Radharani, she made a garland for Lord Krishna. But she was in a particular mood, feeling unqualified to offer this garland to Lord Krishna directly. And she instead handed it over to Vrinda Devi. But she was in the same mood. She also thought, I'm not qualified to offer directly to Krishna. And then instead, she brought the garland to a Subal. And now imagine everybody has the same mood in the spiritual world. That means nobody would serve Krishna. Everybody feels, I'm not qualified, not qualified. So somebody has to feel different. There must be spiritual variety. The Subal, he was completely in a different. He said, come on, what has happened? Give me this garland. I will bring it to Krishna immediately. He ran to Krishna. He's a Priya Nama Saka. Narma, in Sanskrit, Narma. It means very, very joyful, joking. Subal, he's a very joyful cowherd boy. He always makes jokes. So he took the garland, he went to Krishna. At that time, Lord Krishna, he was at the Radha Kunda and deeply absorbed in thoughts of Srimati Radharani. And Subal came, here is a garland for you. Who made this garland? Srimati Radharani. And Lord Krishna felt so much separation from her, he ordered Subal, you bring immediately Srimati Radharani here. But it was midday. And that is not appropriate, that so many household duties are to be performed. And Srimati Radharani, she was always guarded by Jatila. Her eyes were focused, fixed on Srimati Radharani, that she does not become restless, not looking here and there, always protecting. Such a nice Vedic system that during the day the girls could never go out alone. It was so nice. Always with the grandmother. The grandmother always holding hand of the girl, then going out. And if a boy would come, even from the distance, a little closer, the grandmother, hot! Immediately, you go away. What are you doing? And then the boy had to look different direction. Very nice system. But now the girls, they're running all over the place alone. Isn't that good? So Subal, he replied to Krishna that I cannot, this is impossible to bring her. Then I also have to bring Jatila. So that would be some kind of sort of rasa-basa. Well, Krishna, then he threatened Subal, if you don't bring Srimati Radharani immediately, I will drown myself in the Radha Kunda. Well, that's difficult for Krishna. Difficult for Krishna, but Subal took it very serious. He said, okay. He prayed to Yoga Maya to somehow facilitate that, to fulfill the desire of Lord Krishna. So he got one brilliant idea. Yoga Maya immediately empowered Subal. He went to Yavat's palace. That's the father-in-law of Srimati Radharani. He arrived there. Jatila was, she just finished her meal. It is described, Jatila, she has a little belly. And she finished her meal sitting at the doorsteps, and her eyes were focused like a vulture at the window of Srimati Radharani's chamber. That she should not look out of the window, become restless. She was sitting there. And Subal arrived. And of course she noticed Subal. Well, what are you doing? Go away, what are you doing here? The mother, I lost one of my calves. And it is not here, she said, you go away. No, I looked all over the place, I went to the Radha Kunda, it is not there, and to the forest. I'm quite sure my calf mixed with the other calves in your courtyard. Mother, can you please look whether my calf is there? She said, I just finished my meal. Sitting, I cannot get up. You go yourself. That's exactly what Subal wanted to hear. He said, yes, thank you, Mother. I will look myself. He immediately ran into the palace, straight up to Srimati Radharani's room where she was staying. And she was amazed. Subal, you are here. How is this possible? And then he explained the whole story. Krishna immediately wants to see you. Just by hearing the name of Krishna, Radharani fainted on the spot. So he brought her back to external consciousness. And one thing is Subal, he looks exactly like Srimati Radharani. Same facial features, same age, same height, almost no difference. And then, you know, the idea was clear. They exchanged garments very, very quickly. Srimati Radharani took the turban of Subal, put it on her head. He took her sari, mascara painting very quickly. Radharani wiped off the mascara. So at the end, perfect. Subal looked exactly like Srimati Radharani and vice versa. And then he instructed Radharani, now you go quickly, pass by Jatila, and tell her, I found the calf. Just grab any calf and press it against your chest. That's important, press it against your chest. Chest looks a little different. So you press, and then you pass by quickly. Mother, I found my calf, and happily you run away. And that's what she did. But still, Jatila, you found your calf? You found? Yeah, yes, mother, I found my calf. She looked a little bit to the side, imitated Subal's voice. And then, okay, now get out of here. And Radharani, she ran away and dropped the calf, and she ran through the forest of Vrindavan. You can imagine that scene. Radharani and the silk trousers of Subal with the turban, and she running. Meanwhile, so then she met Lord Krishna, a transcendental happy end. But the problem is that Subal, he was stuck in a palace with a sari, eyes painted, and he thought, how to get out of here? Then at that time, Jatila and Kutila, that's the sister-in-law, Radharani, they both wanted to go to the Suryakund to worship the sun god. And Jatila called, oh, daughter-in-law, you come immediately. We have to go worship the sun god. Subal looked out of the window, imitating Radharani's voice. You already go ahead. I just have to finish dressing. You go. I will come after you. Few seconds. Don't worry. Then Jatila sent Kutila, you go and get Radharani. But then Subal, in a very, very strong voice, he said, no, there's no need to come. I'm not a baby. You go immediately. I will come after you, a few seconds. And then they accepted, okay, but don't be late. So they went off, and that was Subal's chance. He immediately ran. Now you can imagine, try to visualize that scene. How Subal in a sari, you know, then if boys wear a sari, they don't know how to walk properly, very difficult. See, he pulled up the sari, you could see the legs of Subal then running through the forest, always adjusting the veil, like this, running. And then when Radharani and Lord Krishna saw Subal arriving in that condition, they were laughing and laughing and laughing. When Subal saw Radharani in that outfit, and then he was laughing. In this way, there was a wonderful ecstasy of laughing. And these are Lord Krishna's pastimes. But my original point was that even in those pastimes, we see that the inhabitants, associates of Lord Krishna, even they followed very strictly all these Vedic rules and regulations. And originally, they do exist even in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. There are also many rules and many regulations, but they are meant, purely meant, to enhance Lord Krishna's pastimes. That's the only purpose. But the purpose for us is to purify our consciousness. It helps us to purify and prepare ourselves properly to follow the devotional activities nicely and with a proper attitude and purification and consciousness. So I think we could conclude at this point. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gop Premanande Hari Hari Bol. If there's any question, I can try to answer. Yes. There. Yes. R. We can. By. I don't clearly understand the question. Whether obstacles make us stronger in devotional service? They help us to become more serious, provided, of course, we really want to become Krishna conscious. Sometimes obstacles can also drive you away from Krishna consciousness. You just become discouraged. Is it not that many devotees sometimes, you know, when they, younger devotees, even elderly devotees, when they begin to contemplate leaving Krishna consciousness, which is horrible when it happens, then you hear this argument. You see, when before I joined Krishna consciousness, I mean, I suffered, yes. Man, I suffered. But, you know, still, I also, some material pleasure was there too. But since I joined Krishna, I only have problems. So many things go wrong. I wanted to marry, it didn't work out. I wanted to do some particular service, it didn't work out. So many things, you know, I'm trying to do, nothing works. Only problems. They sometimes argue like this. So they conclude, when I leave Krishna consciousness, then, you know, from too much problems and suffering, then I will return to a little less suffering. But the real understanding is that before we come to Krishna consciousness, our consciousness is very gross. We are not so much aware, you know, of the more subtle types of suffering we experience as non-devotees. We are not so much aware of it. Or in any case, what we consider to be like a pleasure or happiness, you cannot even compare with the pleasure, happiness and devotional service, Krishna consciousness. Like a drunkard lying on the street, his head is lying in his own, you know, vomited stuff. And then the police, you know, get up, bum, and he becomes angry. I'm okay. So he might think, I'm fine. But do we accept he's fine, he's okay? He suffers. So that when we are not Krishna conscious, there's no real happiness. We might think, you know, I was in a better... And as the devotees, we become very, very sensitive, extremely sensitive. Sometimes a little bit too sensitive, I feel. A little wrong word to a devotee, he doesn't forget it for 2 years, quoting you. 2 years ago, you told me. So we shouldn't have become too sensitive either. devotee becomes very sensitive. But he becomes sensitive to his material impurities. Then we should become very... This nice example, if you place a silk thread on any part of the body, you will not feel it. Tiny silk thread, you can hardly see, you will not feel. But you place it in the eye, you cannot tolerate. You have to get it out by any means. So our consciousness has become so pure that even the slightest material impurity, when we advance, we cannot tolerate, we have to remove it. Then we really begin to advance. But in the beginning, we don't feel anything. So what to speak as non-devotees? Such a gross consciousness. And then all these material sufferings, we don't feel so much. Everything is okay. I'm okay. So my point was, when we are really serious in Krishna consciousness, then these obstacles we experience, they're just stepping stone for us as of more surrender to Krishna. We take it as an impetus to surrender more to Krishna. I remember when I was a young devotee, I tried to apply this attitude. It was in the morning, Monday morning, raining, gray, and I'm supposed to go out and distribute books. You know the special feeling after Sunday program, feast, everything. Monday morning, raining, gray, people, just a few people on the street with an umbrella. I'm supposed to go out. But somehow, I always heard we have to have the spirit, to accept the challenge and become more purified. So I really tried to apply it. And often, other devotees, they didn't want to go out. They said, no, I like challenge. Let me do it. Exactly now I want to go out. This kind of spirit, we shouldn't. Then we are sincere in Krishna consciousness. The devotee does not accept obstacles. So many obstacles are there, but he doesn't accepting in the sense that they will discourage my Krishna consciousness, my devotional career. No, he doesn't accept. A sincere devotee never accepts defeat. And that's why at one point, Maya, the material energy, lets loose. She goes away. It's very discouraging for Maya. Each time I try to get him, he just doesn't care. Who was it? Dhanudar Maharshi in this Brooklyn mood, was it? The Brooklyn mood. So what? That's the pure form of that mood. Any material obstacles, so what? I go on. Even death, as we see, what an example. Even death. That's the final stepping stone to go to Krishna. Was it Dhruva Maharaj? death personified approached, and the Vaikuntha airplane was there, and he just stepped on the head of death personified, using as a staircase, and then he mounted the Vaikuntha airplane, he left. Even that is not an obstacle for the devotee. What to speak of all the other obstacles in between? He never accepts defeat, never. He just becomes more encouraged. And that's why Maya becomes so discouraged anyway. Just give him a garland and leave him alone. So discouraging. Yes, yes. Insignificant, yes. Because if that's another trick of Maya, it's just another form of false ego to think I'm so fallen, I'm too much fallen, I'm really fallen. That means something special. I'm so fallen, I'm too much fallen. You are nothing, you're just something hanging in between, nothing special. You're just in between, hanging in something, in between the doors, in between anything. You're just somewhere hanging out. Nothing special. That means insignificant. Yes, we should always think we're insignificant. But that this you cannot do artificially. Artificially, it won't work. If you try to do it artificially, like sometimes we think, humility means I sit somewhere in the corner of the room and stare at the floor all the time. And feeling really like a cockroach and like this, this kind of, what's the use? That's a mode of ignorance. That's not humility, that's a mode of ignorance. This, what's I'm so insignificant that I cannot do anything for Krishna. No. In the beginning, we have all these material qualities. We have to engage everything in Krishna's service. If you're talkative, don't become humble and then stop speaking. I mean, in that sense, humble. No, real humbleness means now you talk about Krishna. You talk, 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 but about Krishna. Then you purify your material qualities. You think you're very intelligent. Convince other intelligent people to surrender to Krishna. Display your intelligence for Krishna intelligence. You're a musician. Humbleness does not mean that I smash my instrument to pieces and now I'm free. And then meditating. Now the other day, I think we talked about this living in the temple, and then there's a nice Christian, I think, Christian proverb. They say it is better to live outside the church and always desire to live in the church than living in the church and always desiring to live outside the church. It's a very good proverb. So we can adopt this immediately. It's better, in one sense, better you live outside and always desire. It would be so nice to be a devotee, live in a temple. Oh, you have so much admiration and respect for the devotees and this desire, one day I will also join. Rather living in a temple and always meditating, how would it be to have my own house, my own flat, and always looking out. So in that sense. Yeah, story of the Brahmana and the prostitute, also nice. Exactly. How is it? Oh. Yes. See, yes, we can even compare the Indian culture, you know, with the Western culture. Like I was also thinking, you know, why our householders have so many problems and relationship problems and chastity problems, all those things. And that's primarily due to our upbringing in the Western culture. Just like in the India, you see this very nicely, that the wife, she's most of the time engaged with her relatives. You know, she has her quarters, relatives are visiting, and then she takes, you know, other babies on her lap, and they're talking, and very nicely. Then it's simple to be chaste. You know, I have my nice husband. He is in another quarter talking to his, you know, his relatives and doing things, and I talk with my relatives and my sister, so many things. Whole family is there. Then it's easy to be chaste. But our culture is different. When we joined Krishna consciousness, many of us, you know, our relatives rejected us. It's unfortunate. We should try by any means to change it. Still, you know, encourage our to maintain relationships. By all means, we should try. But the it's not so intimate any longer, that relationship with our relatives, since most of them do not want to take up the principles of Krishna consciousness. If they do, that's wonderful. That's good. But this is a sort of protection, you know, for the husband and wife. Otherwise, again, always alone. And if husband is gone, he has to do some work, some business, you know, for 1 week. You can imagine, how can wife be chaste? Just sit alone, every day alone. Especially the woman's nature is to have association, social. She feels happy when she's together with others and talking and about Krishna. And then she feels protected, happy. But if that is not if that is not given, then she might become restless. And then leaving home, walking out, and then so many things can happen. Not protected anymore. And chastity also, not protected. Chastity simply means I have my husband, that's all I know. And you, of course she respects everyone, but no intimate relationship. No question. That means chastity. Only intimate relationship with a husband and nobody else. That's chastity. Admiring one's husband. Almost worshipping him. But that also shows how qualified the husband must be. If he displays lust or anger, the wife immediately loses respect. Immediately. What is this? Immediately loses respect. And again, she's not protected. Naturally looking for someone who is more kind, more, you know, efficient in his dealings with her. And then chastity gone. I mean. So it is due to our only the only, you know, hope we have is that we advance very nicely in our Krishna consciousness. And then it is also possible. If husband and wife both very nicely advance in Krishna consciousness, then there's no need of so many rules and regulations and social, you know, things. You do not depend on it. If we are not very Krishna conscious, then it makes a big difference. So I would like to stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.